Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the deadlocked super committee that has to agree on $1.2 trillion in cuts by Monday to meet the Wednesday deadline before the sequester happens and automatic across-the-board cuts take place. Former six-term Congressman Bob Edgar, who is now head of Common Cause, joins us to talk about our broken Congress, corrupted by lobbyists and special interests, to the point where they have exempted themselves from insider trading laws on stock transactions. We will follow up on whether, as a result of the recent 60 Minutes expose and citizen outrage it provoked, the Stock Act aimed at cleaning up Congress will be revived. Then we'll examine Turkey's more assertive role in the Middle East as it emerges as the best hope to facilitate the removal of the bloody Assad regime next door in Syria, avoid civil war, and help stabilize a post-Assad Syria. Asla Bali, a specialist on international human rights and the laws of war, joins us. We will discuss what motivates Turkey's leader and the behind-the-scenes reasons for Turkey's alienation from Israel and the reversal of its support for the Assad regime. Then finally, Susan Shirk joins us. She served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of State in the Bureau of East Asia and Pacific Affairs, and we will discuss President Obama's trip to Australia and the APEC summit in Indonesia and the so-called pivot towards Asia in terms of the Obama administration's new foreign policy doctrine that promises to look more towards Asia and China and away from the traditional primary focus on Europe. Joining us now is Bob Edgar, the president and CEO of Common Cause, a national, nonpartisan, nonprofit citizens lobby working to make government at all levels more honest, open, and accountable, and to connect citizens with their democracy. Previously, he served 12 years in the House of Representatives for the 7th Congressional District in Pennsylvania outside of Philadelphia. He was part of the congressional class nicknamed the Watergate Babies, those elected in the wake of the Watergate scandal, who led to sweeping reforms of Congress. Welcome to Background Briefing, Bob Edgar.
It's good to be with you.
And clearly the deadlocked super committee is, I think, even aides are leaking this. Patty Murray, the co-chair, seemed to indicate that they're not going to come to an agreement, that they're deadlocked because they're evenly numbered Republicans and Democrats. Somebody has to cross the line. And apparently that's not going to happen. Do you think this will mean, and of course, just in terms of technicalities, even though the decision's due by Thanksgiving, they need to come up with it tomorrow. I mean, they need to come up with it Monday in order for the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, to score it to make sure that the figures make sense. So it looks like they're not going to make the deadline. Do you think the across-the-board cuts will automatically come into play?
Well, first, let me say that I think that the super committee was a flawed idea from the very beginning. It was flawed primarily because you have on the conservative Republican side an unwillingness to move on revenues, and on the Democratic side, a need to protect some of the social programs. Your question's a good one. I think that the committee will fail, but when it fails, I don't think the automatic cuts will go into play. For example, they don't go into play until 2013. That gives Congress an awful lot of time to tinker around, and one of the ways they'll tinker is to restore the funds for the defense budget. Conservatives and liberals all have defense contractors in their congressional districts, and money has corroded the political system in which we operate today. So I think the super committee will fail, but I also think the across-the-board cuts will be tinkered with over the course of 2012 before they take place in 2013.
And Bob Edgar, do you think that the Congress, now with record low approval ratings of 9%, and frankly, I wonder who those 9% are, that their ratings will go even lower?
Well, I think before they worry too much about the ratings, they ought to worry about the fact that there's a plague on both parties, and I think all incumbents are going to be in trouble in 2012, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, simply because of the outrage of the people. My hope is that all of the Occupy movements will make a complete shift to occupying democracy, register to vote, get involved in the political process, and that some new people will step forward to run for public office so that there is competition across the board in both the Democratic and Republican parties in 2012. I think we need some new people in office to push for more collaboration, more cooperation. When I served in Congress for 12 years from 1975 to 1987, some of my best friends were moderate Republicans like Jake Javits and Senator Brooks and Senator Hines and Schweiker and other moderate Republicans. Those moderate Republicans have disappeared completely. And when you have the mentality of a Bachman and mentality of a ultra-conservative right-wing policies being pushed with no intention of compromise, you're going to simply see deadlock moving into the future. And America cannot afford that. We've got to address the issues of global warming. We've got to address the issues of jobs and employment. And we're not going to be able to see our Congress really do the right thing until we get elected officials who serve the public interest and not the special interest.
Frankly, I could see a very, very angry electorate in 2012 at the polls, assuming they're not so disgusted that they won't show up to vote.
Yeah, I think the super committee was wishful thinking on the part of particularly the Democrats, who wanted to get away from the deadlock that was occurring in the summer, hoping that if 12 competent House and Senate members spend enough time with each other, that you would see give and take on both sides, both on the revenue side and on the expenditure side. That clearly is not going to happen. I think it would have worked better if the sequestering would have occurred exactly when the super committee failed. By giving a whole year between now and the time that the cuts kick in, all kinds of things can happen with Congress. So I think we're going to see more deadlocks and more change. And frankly, I put the blame on the conservative Republicans who got elected. Many of them got elected on one issue, concerns of abortion and homosexuality and civil marriage. And they're just not up to the task of legislating like many of their colleagues in the past who were Republicans, fiscally conservative, but cared what was in the best interest of the nation. And it was not inconceivable for Republicans and Democrats to put in place the Older Americans Act, Head Start, the First Energy Bill, resource recovery legislation. It wasn't just Democrats that put that in place. Democrats and Republicans working together were able to think beyond their reelections, think beyond party politics, and that simply isn't the case these days.
Again, I'm speaking with Bob Edgar, the president and CEO of Common Cause. He served for 12 years in the House of Representatives. We're talking about the super committee's apparent inability to agree on the $1.2 trillion in cuts and the extent to which the automatic trigger that's supposed to take place will probably not happen in terms of the Congress having plenty of time to weasel their way out of this enforced agreement. So the Republicans drew a line in the sand on tax cuts, and mostly to do with keeping the Bush tax cuts in play. That's apparently what the real line in the sand and the impasse has been over. Economist Paul Krugman suggested that a failure to come to an agreement would be a good thing, that these cuts would automatically expire. Do you think that that's a good idea?
Well, Paul's very bright, and he has a better handle on economics than I do, and he has been a real champion of saying that the emperor has no clothes and the system isn't working. I think he has more faith in the fact that the automatic cuts will go into play. My own sense is that there's another ingredient that we haven't talked about, and that is the role of money in politics. Since the Citizens United case, a lot of very, very conservative corporations and very conservative wealthy people will have quite a bit of influence and flood the political system with money. And they will try to protect not only the tax system, protecting the wealthy from paying more tax, but they will, my friend Bill Moyer says it best, he says, this is the most dangerous moment in American history. We're either going to be a nation that's of and by and for the people, or of and by and for corporations and the wealthy. And I think that's the danger that we face moving forward. And when you have people like the Koch brothers, David and Charles Koch, who have infiltrated the political system, have put people on the Energy and Commerce Committee to block all regulations of EPA on clean air and clean water. When you have corporations sitting down with state legislators and national legislators, drafting bills with corporate lawyers in the same room with average ordinary legislative people, you've got a real problem. And no one believed that the day before Citizens United was passed by the Supreme Court that corporations and labor unions didn't already have a role in politics. But now, because of that decision, very narrowly passed by a 5-4 vote, corporations and labor unions can dip into their corporate treasury and spend those on independent expenditures for and against candidates. And I believe that over the course of time, if we don't change that Citizens United case, we're going to find money even a more corrosive influence than it already is.
And Bob Edgar, I think in many ways the recent expose by 60 Minutes that showed how the Congress have exempted themselves from insider trading laws on stock transactions. Not that we needed another reminder of the corruption of Congress, but I think this was particularly outrageous, and I think it provoked a tremendously strong response from the public. It certainly did it to me. I thought I had a pretty high threshold for outrage. But the Stock Act, of course, has been languishing in the House since it was brought in by a Washington State congressman who's no longer in the House. Part of the 60 Minutes report showed how the reporter kept trying to ambush congressmen on the steps to ask them about the Stock Act. They all acted as if they'd never heard of it. Now, apparently, it's starting to get some co-sponsors. What's your understanding of where things stand?
Well, I think the 60 Minutes piece was helpful. It's too bad that so many newspapers and media outlets have done away with their investigative reporting. Fortunately, 60 Minutes and ProPublica and a few other organizations continue to do the investigation. I think it's clear that some members of the House of Representatives and the Senate had, in fact, used inside knowledge to gain massive wealth. Clearly, it's not all of the House and Senate members, but it's significant that a number of them have been caught with their fingers in the cookie jar. And I think the 60 Minutes piece will enable those supporters of the Stock Act to get more co-sponsors on both the House and Senate side. And my hope is that the embarrassment will be so high that congressmen and senators will cross party lines, come together, and support the Stock Act. I would ask them to go even further. I think because of some of what we've seen with Citizens United, we need some better rules and regulations on shareholder rights. We need to allow people to have full transparency of political contributions. And I think if we had more investigative reporting, we'd see even more, not just insider trading, but more control of our elected officials by certain special interests that want to stop legislation to protect the environment, stop legislation to protect a tax system that has shrunk in its ability to get adequate revenues to run our country.
Well, I think, Bob Edgar, what absolutely enrages citizens is that the Congress who make laws that exempt them from following the same laws that us mere mortals have to follow. Yeah. Are there any other examples that you know of apart from this exemption from insider trading?
Well, when I served in Congress, I served on the Public Works Committee, and sitting in the audience every time we had a hearing, every seat was filled, but it was filled with the people who build our highways and our airports, all of the special interest groups. And so, unfortunately, average ordinary citizens aren't able to see the influence of those special interests on elected officials. And when a House member now has to raise $1.2 million to get reelected, and senators in some of the larger states are spending $15, $20, $30 million, even more, to run for the United States Senate, they're not getting that money from average ordinary citizens or citizens in their congressional districts. They're getting that money from special interests. So we're getting the best legislative body that money can buy. And unfortunately, more of that is under the control of special interests rather than the public's interests. I hope that the Occupy movement and some other grassroots movements will begin to help raise the level of visibility about how money is corroding our system. And we can get some elected officials who push not only the Stock Act, but put in place things like public financing of elections so that persons who are not multimillionaires can get elected to the House and Senate and represent their constituents as opposed to representing some corporate special interest.
I thank you for joining us here today, Bob Edgar.
Good to be with you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Bob Edgar, the president and CEO of Common Cause, a national nonpartisan nonprofit citizens lobby working to make government at all levels more honest, open, and accountable, and to connect citizens with their democracy. Previously, he served 12 years in the House of Representatives. He was part of the congressional class nicknamed the Watergate Babies, those elected in the wake of the Watergate scandal who led sweeping reforms of Congress. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about Turkey's more assertive role in the Middle East.
There's a limit to your love, like a waterfall in slow motion, like a map with no ocean. There's a limit to your love. Your love, your love, your love.